Chapter 24. Holy shit, Skippy! I said that with such force that I got tiny dots of spit on the inside of my helmet visor. You finished reading about the dilemma Perkins got into? Yeah. OMG. That was my reaction when I downloaded the report. The Mavericks may be even more talented at finding trouble than you are. We need to help them. Even Chotek will agree with that. You are more optimistic about Count Chocula than I am, but let's go with that. Anyway, we can't do anything until I kill that energy virus. Right. If I can. If? Unless it kills us first. Once again, you are a huge source of comfort to me. I do what I can, Joe. Hey, speaking of comfort, are you comfy out there? Comfy enough, I guess. Good, good. Well, after reading about Perkins, you must be pretty bored, huh? God damn it. My spidey sense failed me, so I idiotically replied, Yeah, it's awfully dull out here. He pondered in a voice that tingled with delight as if he hadn't been planning this all along. You are bored? Then he said something that made my blood run ice cold. Gosh, if only there was some way for me to entertain you. My father is a fan of old movies. On Sunday nights, the rest of us would have to suffer through watching whatever classic movie he insisted was important for me and my sister to see. Yes, I used air quotes around the word classic because some of the crap we had to watch was truly awful. We especially groaned when the credits opened and realized that night's movie was in black and white. Once in a while, we got a pleasant surprise. Like, I did enjoy some old movies, and most anything with John Wayne was worth watching. Anyway, I mention this because we watched one movie on a rainy Sunday night in March. Football was over for the season, it was about 5 degrees above freezing and raining outside, and the weather had been like that for a solid week. My father made pizza, and we had chocolate cake for dessert. I remember those details because the movie gave me nightmares and I didn't sleep well that night. It was Apocalypse Now, about the Vietnam War. Or, it was sort of about that war. I think the war was just a convenient background for whatever message the filmmakers wanted to present. If you haven't seen it, the movie has famous lines like, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory. You've heard that quote. Of course you have. That's where it came from. Toward the end of that movie, Marlon Brando's character Colonel Kurtz is splashing water over his head and mumbling, the horror, the horror. His character has seen such terrible things, been through so much horror, that his mind is totally gone. Let me tell you, that Colonel Kurtz guy ain't seen shit compared to what Skippy put me through. Take a deep breath and prepare yourself. Ready? I have two words for you. Knight Rider. Not just Knight Rider, the original TV show. This was the director's cut with commentary. When Skippy started playing the pilot episode in my visor so there was no way for me to ignore it, I had protested. Come on, Skippy, there is no director's cut of these episodes. Technically, you are correct, Joe, because no director associated with this appalling crap fest would bother to compile an alternate version. However, I have many of the scenes that got cut from the final episode, so I am able to slap them together. The commentary was Skippy's own, mostly snarky remarks about how bad the show was and how criminally stupid monkeys must be to have watched it. What really got him upset was the artificial intelligence named Kit built into the car, which was an insult to AIs, or even to the concept of AIs. I had to endure his diatribes against the producers of the show every time Kit spoke or did anything. He was making me take a bullet for all monkeys, so all of you owe me, big time. The worst part is that instead of each episode being mercifully only 42 minutes, the director's cut stretched them to an average of 68 minutes. Skippy, please, I groaned as one mindless episode ended and another began. I'm begging you, make it stop. Joe, you promised to let me educate you about crappy 80s TV shows. We had plenty of time to do that in the Roach Motel, but no, you kept telling me you were too busy. You already made me watch Manimal with you. Yes, and we were supposed to move on to the Love Boat, but again you told me you were too busy. Would you prefer the Love Boat? I have every episode of that schlock fest also. How about we roll the pilot and— No, let's stick with Knight Rider, I sighed, steeling myself for another torturous hour of watching the Hoff. It's almost done anyway, right? Ha! As if, dude. We're still in the first season. Oh, I can't take this. If you don't want another Knight Rider, there are plenty other shows to choose from. The 80s were a treasure trove of crappy TV. I could show you, please, anything else. Joe, you have suffered enough. So I'm going to let you watch Smokey and the Bandit. Cool. I've seen that movie. My father had a friend with a Bandit Trans Am, but it was a tribute car, not an original. And when I was in high school, I thought that car was super cool, I remarked happily, not believing my good luck. Then I got a sinking feeling, because Skippy is an asshole, and the universe hates me. Wait, I was suspicious. The second Bandit movie sucked. You're not going to show me that one, are you? The second Bandit movie is universally renowned for its money-grabbing suckitude. However, you will not be watching part two. Oh, thank God. Instead, I will treat you to part three. What? No way, I scoffed. Now you're just making shit up. There was no third movie. You think there was not a third Bandit movie because it was so instantly forgettable. Crap. He was right. There was a part three. Mercifully, I fell asleep after about an hour, and Skippy didn't wake me for another 6 hours. Hey, Joe! Skippy shouted as he played reveille in my helmet speakers. Rise and shine, sleepyhead. Time to go to work. Aw, man. Good morning. How about coffee first? Plenty of coffee in that dropship ahead of you. Be a good boy and go get it. Without gravity, you'd think my muscles wouldn't get stiff while I slept, but they did. While I stretched, I checked status of the crew in my visor and did a roll call of the dropship retrieval teams. Everyone on the teams were ready and eager to go. We left much of the crew sleeping since there wasn't anything they could do, and sleeping conserved power and oxygen. There were 4 2-person teams assigned to getting dropships up and running. All 8 of us were pilots. I was certainly not the most qualified pilot, but I had the most experience with space diving, and Skippy wanted me on a retrieval team in case we ran into problems. My team was me and Major Desai. We got unclipped from our tethers and puffed our gas canisters experimentally. There were no fancy jetpacks available for this mission. They would have been impossible to power up by hand cranking, and their big power cells took too long to drain completely. Desai and I would fly through the sky using basically crude air bottles to propel us. It was awkward, and we had only been able to practice for an hour before we left the Dutchman behind. It took us almost 10 minutes, letting the bottles puff gently, to maneuver close enough together so I could launch a line toward her. She caught it on the first try, and I was proud we were the second of 4 teams to link up. Linking up was the easy part. The dropships were parked a significant distance away from us to prevent the energy virus jumping across the distance and infecting the systems in our spacesuits, so it was a long flight. And I took the opportunity to ask Skippy a question that had been bugging me since before we jumped blindly into the Roach Motel. Hey, Skippy. I glanced to my left where Desai was flying in formation with me on the other end of the tether line. Hey, Joe. The beer can's voice came out of my helmet speakers, sounding thoroughly depressed. Damn it, I needed Skippy to be focused, not moping around. What's up? Before we get to that, are you okay? Yeah, just, I'm worried about this energy virus thing. Not this incident specifically, I have a plan to deal with it. It's just, damn it, we never get a break. Just as we stomp one problem flat, another one pops up to bite us in the ass. I've been worrying about that too, and I have a question for you. I will answer if I can. It worried me that he didn't bother to include a snarky remark. The elders left a lot of their stuff around, and not just derelict ships and ruins and the kind of stuff you'd expect to see lying around after a civilization disappears. The elders left functioning equipment behind, like AIs and sentinels and guardians, and those power sink things you found inside the star at the Roach Motel. If you are asking me if I know where the energy of those power sinks is going, or what it is or was used for, the answer sadly is still no. I've been racking my brain trying to think why those power sinks are still active, but it is a complete mystery to me. Whatever is the purpose of the power sinks, they are important enough to require the guardians to protect them. Uh-huh. Well, that's part of my question. When we were in the Roach Motel, I asked if the elders ascended and left the galaxy behind, why they would still care about whether someone here messes with their stuff long after they're gone. Then I thought, what if that is the wrong question? I'm not following you. Skippy, it's like the Elders left the galaxy so fast they didn't have time to turn the stove off. That got me thinking. What if the Elders didn't ascend? What? His voice had lost the depressed tone. What do you mean they didn't ascend? That is such a dumbass. How do you know they ascended? Before you answer, you have told me many times your memories are confused and incomplete. What if, instead of ascending and being up there somewhere looking down on us like Santa Claus checking who's naughty or nice, they're just gone? What if something went wrong with the ascending process? Or what if they never got to the ascending process? What if something or someone killed them all?
Whoa!
If the Elders suddenly vanished unexpectedly, that might explain why they left so much of their stuff laying around still operational, right?
I suppose that is possible, Joe, the beer can responded very slowly, like he was having trouble processing what I said.
I do not like thinking about that. Also, we know from Gingerbread that the Elders did clean up a lot of their critical equipment in preparation for ascending, so... No, Skippy, we do not know that. All we know is that a lot of the Elders' stuff is missing, and there are a whole lot of craters where their stuff used to be, on Gingerbread and its sites all across the galaxy. Those craters might be evidence of the Elders cleaning up their stuff before they left, or the craters might be signs that something very bad happened to the Elders before they could ascend. Think about it. Maybe the Elders did not leave you behind on purpose. Maybe something happened so fast, so traumatic, so overwhelming, that they weren't able to help you. Damn. Joe, this is a lot for me to process. I refuse to believe the Elders did not ascend until I see evidence that they didn't. Okay, but even then, it sure looks like they left in a big hurry, right? That explains why they left the stove on. Maybe they were attacked and had to rush the ascending process to protect themselves, get away while they could. Oh, crap. Joe, I do not want to think about any of this right now. Damn, my brain hurts just thinking about it. Shit. The idea of the Elders peacefully ascending is one of the few things I thought I knew for certain, and now you've taken even that away from me. Sorry, Skippy. Hey, you big jerk face. We might have answers to some of these questions if you had done what I wanted while we had the chance in the Roach Motel. I wanted to investigate that hidden planet you called Vera, but no, you and Count Chocula were all like... He used a mocking little girl's voice.
Oh, no, we can't go there, it's too scary,
and...
We shouldn't do that, it makes too much sense!
Or,
we might get our delicate petticoats dirty!
Or, okay, Skippy, I get the point. Again, you already made this argument like a million freaking times. If I did it 1,000,001, would that change your mind? No. Joe, I am again disappointed in you.
You needed to grow a pair and stand up to Count Chocula when he was wrong about something, so...
Damn it, Skippy. I did not need to stand up to him, because in this case I agree with him. Our mission was to rebuild the Dutchman if we could. I remember you telling me every freaking day not to get my hopes up about that until you actually got our Frankenship slapped together with duct tape. And once the ship was mostly functional again, our mission was to get the hell out of the Roach Motel ASAP before the Guardians asked too many questions you couldn't answer. But, no buts, Skippy. Going to Vera and poking your nose around in there could not have done anything to ensure the success of our mission, and it could have been another goddamn beer can-inspired disaster. I was pissed at him, and I didn't care about hurting his feelings. Vera was the name I gave to the hidden planet in the Roach Motel, the world Skippy suspected was out of phase or in another dimension, or some other nerdy technical explanation the beer can used to confuse me. We never actually saw Vera, or detected it directly on sensors, so fans of the old TV show Cheers will understand why I named the place. You don't know that, Joe. Vera could have been a treasure trove of unimaginable technology. And more importantly, answers. Answers I need, Joe. Answers you need. The Elders had cleaned up Gingerbread so thoroughly that I couldn't get any useful data there. Hey, remember, you were the one who asked me why the Elders had bothered to wall off the Roach Motel from other species. Why they would care after they ascended. Here's what I do know for dead certain, Skippy. If we went poking around Vera and did that crazy stunt you wanted, it was not crazy, and it was not a stunt. Trying to reverse the phase field surrounding Vera is a stunt, and it's crazy. Damn, have you not learned anything from working with us monkeys? You can't think only of yourself. You are part of this crew, of this team. Put the team first, Skippy. The Army pounded that into my head over and over, and although I resented it, they were right. The Army works because the force is a team. It's not about me. It's about the mission, and you need a team to achieve the mission. Skippy gave me a sarcastic, slow clap, the hand slaps echoing in my helmet.
Oh, bravo, G.I. Joey. That speech was very inspiring.
Here's what I know for dead certain. The Roach Motel was our best chance to get real answers to who I am, how I got buried in the dirt on Paradise, and what the hell has been going on in the galaxy for the past 100 million years. I thought we were friends, Joe. His voice sounded genuinely hurt. You act like you don't care.
Skippy, I took a deep breath to give myself time to think, because it was very important I say the right thing. I am your friend. We do need answers. You see this patch? I tapped the U.S. Army logo on my spacesuit. I am a soldier. I have a job to do, a job assigned by UNEF Command, even though they probably regret every day making me captain of this ship. Yes, we need answers. If we had more than one ship, and the crew were capable of flying the ship without you, I might have sent the Dutchman away to go home and gone poking around Vera with you after the ship safely got out of the Roach Motel. We don't have more than one ship, and back then we couldn't fly the Dutchman without you. That means I had to choose between our primary mission of securing the future of Earth or searching for the answer to bigger questions to satisfy our curiosity. Do you understand that? Oh, I understand it. I do not like it. Great. Then, I also think you are dead wrong about this. You are thinking short term. You and Count Chocula are always talking about how you need to stop reacting to events and develop a long-term strategy. But when you get an opportunity to actually do that, you two chicken shits always find an excuse not to do it.
It's complicated, Skippy, but you're right. You are absolutely right. Maybe we should have somehow taken the opportunity to explore that hidden planet while we were in the Roach Motel, because I don't think we will go back there again. I'll think about that, okay? Right now, my visor is telling me it's time to begin slowing down to rendezvous with that dropship. Our target dropship was not even a dot to my naked eye when we started. We had to rely on our visors to guide us. We went slowly and carefully, because once the gas in our maneuvering bottles ran out, we would drift helplessly in space. The big Theranin Condor dropship now loomed in front and above me, with the Psi seeing the dropship from above, if those terms had any meaning in space. Between us was not just a thin tether line. The tether had now spread out like a spider web, so it was twice the size of the Condor. That was a good thing, because our clumsy flying had us significantly off-center. The spider web was going to catch the Condor's right wing and tail, and hopefully get tangled in the extended landing skids. Ready? I asked needlessly as one strand of the spider web dragged along the dropship's wing.
Ready, Desai acknowledged. She was by far a better pilot than me, but her experience with space diving was limited. We had not thought pilots needed much training in free-fall diving, so they hadn't spent much time on that activity. Clearly, the captain of the ship was an idiot for skimping on that training. That was a lesson learned. Hans Chotek had told me to expect the unexpected, and in this case I hadn't thought far enough ahead. Helplessly, we watched as the spiderweb strands slid along the smooth, stubby wing of the Condor. The tugging caused me to spin around, and I didn't fight it. All I cared about was the spiderweb getting securely wrapped around something. But it was slipping off the wing, and now curling around the aft body. As dropships are designed to fly at high speed in an atmosphere, their surfaces are smooth and sleek, giving the spiderweb little to snag on. Damn it, when you don't want something to snag, it always does. But the one time you need the freaking thing to catch on a... Success. I was jerked roughly around, spinning head over heels as the web wrapped itself around a landing gear strut and an engine inspection panel. We had locked those panels open before ejecting the dropship to give the spiderweb more obstructions to cling onto. The momentum of me and Desai caused the panel to break off one pin, but the other held, and after a couple minutes of nausea-inducing spinning around, we got ourselves stable and began pulling ourselves toward the Condor hand over hand. We had to manually crank the outer airlock door open. Then Desai got in with me, and we cranked the outer door closed to conserve oxygen before getting the inner door open. We floated into an absolutely dark interior, illuminated only by our helmet lights.
"This is creepy," she said in a soft voice. "Colonel, if you're thinking of shouting boo to scare me, don't."
"I'm with you, Desai. Let's get this thing restarted."
I glanced at my suit's power meter. Even if everything worked perfectly and we got the dropship restarted, it would be a while before the internal temperature allowed us to crack open our faceplates. Before that, we both would need to hand-crank more juice into our suit's power cells. The drinking water tank in my suit, which contained a mixture of water, sugar, and nutritiously yummy sludge, was running low. I needed more food if I had to power my suit by hand for long. We floated into the big aft cargo bay where mad scientist contraption number 3 took up most of the space.
"Skippy, does this thing look okay to you? Scanning it now with your suit sensors."
"Yes, it looks perfectly fine. Get started, please. You don't have a lot of time if we run into problems."
"Affirmative," I agreed, and I clicked to pull up the instructions in my visor.
Mad scientist contraption number 1 was the spring that got our suits rebooted. Number 2 was the hand crank thingy we used to energize our suit power cells. Number 3 was a fuel cell. One tank full of liquid oxygen, a tank full of liquid hydrogen, and a membrane where H combined with O2 and generated electricity and water. The resulting water would mostly be dumped into space as the dropship didn't have room to store it, and we didn't want the additional mass that the Condor needed to maneuver later. Contraptions number 1 and 2 had used mechanical energy, but our science team had dreamed up number 3 to use a chemical reaction. Mostly it had been Friedlander's brainstorm. He realized that the energy virus could not easily infect potential energy, and monatomic oxygen and hydrogen represented potential energy. The energy only got converted to useful electricity when the atoms combined to form water. Friedlander explained to me that potential energy is like holding a stone on top of a building. By itself, the stone has no useful energy. But if you release the stone, the force of gravity acts on it, and it acquires kinetic energy as it falls. The springs we used to reboot our spacesuits had potential energy when they were wound up. Once we released the spring, it unwound to create kinetic energy, and the motor attached to the spring converted kinetic energy to electricity. That's enough physics lessons for today. I mention the details because Friedlander's team really did science the shit out of the problem, and that's why we had a chance to defeat an Elder energy virus and survive. Skippy had grumbled that fuel cells were an ancient and crude technology, so old they had been used aboard the Apollo spacecraft that first took humans to the moon. With all his grumbling, he had agreed it was a decent idea, and more importantly, fuel cells were relatively simple, and the Dutchman had the manufacturing capacity to make the membranes. Desai and I carefully turned stiff valves and pumped levers to get the pressurized liquid oxygen and hydrogen flowing. Then, in the scariest part of the operation, we had to connect our already depleted suit power cells to the membrane to bring it up to operating temperature. I watched with alarm as the power level of my suit drained quickly, even though I had the heaters turned off. Skippy announced unhappily. "The membrane is taking more power than expected to warm up. Joe, you and Desai need to disconnect and stop the power flow from your suits."
"Desai," I ordered, "do it."
"Yes, Colonel," she acknowledged. And I saw in my visor that her suit had less than 5% power left when she cut off the power transfer and disconnected the cable.
"Sir, you are still connected?"
"Yes." I watched the power meter spiral down toward 3%, then lower. "We need to get this fuel cell working or everyone dies out here."
"There are 3 other dropships with fuel cells, Joe," Skippy reminded me.
"Yes, but we reached this one first," I protested.
Desai and I had been given the closest and easiest target, so we were already aboard our Condor while the other 3 retrieval teams were still approaching their dropships.
"If we can't figure out how to make this fuel cell work, that's not good news for the other teams. Once this thing starts producing electricity, I can reverse the power flow and recharge my suit. If we can't get it working, I'm screwed anyway."
"I hate to admit this, but you do have a point," Skippy sighed.
"Colonel Bishop," Desai waved a hand to get my attention, "I should drain my suit also to give us the best chance to—"
"Negative, Desai. As long as you still have power, you can talk with Skippy to troubleshoot this damn thing. Look, I'm turning my oxygen mask on," I told her as my power meter dropped to 1%, "and I'll crank the handle again.
I hooked my feet under the fuel cell so my motion didn't send me flying around the cargo bay.
"Joe, you idiot! That handle can't provide enough power to get your suit restarted," Skippy warned. "Disconnect now!"
But
trust me! Now!"
I didn't argue, as my visor was already going dim from the power drain.
"Done."
"Whew,"
Skippy exhaled.
"That was close. Joe, the amount of power needed to get your suit rebooted from zero is more than you can generate with that crank handle thingy. Speaking of which, get cranking, monkey boy."
"Aye, aye," I shuddered, thinking how close I had come to disaster. With the handle fitted to the gear again, I pulled and pushed. The power meter stayed stubbornly at 1%, but it didn't drop, so I counted that as a win. "What about the fuel cell?"
"Give it time. It is warming up slowly. The heat needs time to propagate. Don't be so impatient, Joe," he chided me. "And...
Yes, success. The reaction is starting. I'm feeding all the power generated into the heater unit to bring it up to optimal temperature."
Desai and I waited, both of us cranking handles to build up power in our dangerously depleted suit power cells. It took 8 long minutes before Skippy announced we both could use the fuel cell to provide power to our suits.
"Is that smart, Skippy? Shouldn't we get the auxiliary power unit going first?"
"Well, I said it, so of course it is smart."
"Duh.
The APU can't be restarted until the dropship's power cells have enough charge to energize the containment field. While we're waiting for that, you two should take the opportunity to top up your own power cells. You may need to assist the other teams, and you'll need a healthy charge to do that."
"That makes sense, Skippy," I admitted, while connecting a power cable to the fuel cell and seeing the power meter of my suit glow an encouraging blue as it sucked in fresh electricity. We got the Condor's APU nicely humming along at low power 4 hours later, and after another hour, Desai and I were blessedly able to remove our helmets and breathe air in the cabin. I was super happy to get the breathing mask off my face. It had scratched my cheek so much I was bleeding.
"Ah, that feels good."
I breathed in a lungful of air that had not been recycled 1,000 times by my suit.
"Oof."
I wrinkled my nose, sniffing.
"Damn. Is that bad smell me?"
"It could be me," Desai admitted. "It's just the two of us. If you want to freshen up in the bathroom," I suggested. "Hey, go ahead."
"Thank you, sir, but I would feel guilty about all the people stuck in their suits out there. Besides, we need to get back into the suits to pick up the crew, and I don't want to get myself dirty again by sliding back into this suit."
"Ah, you're right," I agreed, disappointed because I had been looking forward to washing up in the Condor's tiny bathroom. We had another 2 hours of doing nothing before we could safely fire up the dropship's main control systems and begin a pre-flight check.
"Hey, Skippy, you got any crappy 80s TV shows I can watch to kill time?"
I did not want him to torture me with bad TV, but I needed to think about how to rescue Paradise from infected keepers, so watching mindless shows would allow my subconscious to work on the problem.
What?
Skippy could not believe his good fortune.
"You want me to entertain you?"
"No, but I have nothing else to do, and I'm bored, and you're eventually going to make me watch this crap anyway, so let's get it over with." What I didn't say was old TV shows were a better option than Skippy singing to me. I could turn my brain off to ignore a TV show, but there was no way to ignore the incredible singing talent of Skippy.
"That's a good attitude, Joe. As a reward, you can watch Casablanca."
"And my dad had us watch it," I noted with a wave of nostalgia.
"That's okay.
Thanks, Skippy."
"Oh, no, dude."
His evil laugh reminded me of the villain in a James Bond movie. "You are referring to the classic 1942 film? I will be showing you the 1983 TV series."
"There was a TV show about Casablanca?"
I asked, astonished.
Sort of. The guy who played Rick was David Soul. You know, the blonde guy from Starsky and Hutch."
"Damn. The only thing I knew about Starsky and Hutch was the red car, and the only reason I know that is I saw a car painted like that at an old car show in Bangor."
"Skippy, I never heard of this show."
"That's not surprising, Joe. They shot 5 episodes, but the network killed it out of embarrassment after 3. Everyone involved would like to forget about it."
"Wait just a minute." I cocked my head, certain he was screwing with me again. "If this show was so bad, why did the studio pay to digitize it?"
"They didn't.
Duh.
Then how do you have it? Oh, the last time we were at Earth, I paid to have that show and a veritable cornucopia of similar crap digitized for me.
You paid for it?
Well, not me. The contract was arranged through a shell company I named Magnificent Enterprises LLC. Sounds impressive, huh? But don't worry. No one will ever trace it back to me.
I'm not worried about the stupid TV show. Where the hell did you get the freaking money?
Oh, that. Joe, I can neither confirm nor deny any scandalous accusations, but there might be a mob-controlled bank in Eastern Europe that is missing some money.
Or it might be missing a whole lot of money.
He giggled with glee.
When the gangsters notice their money is gone, somebody has got some splainin' to do.
Ah, oh, damn it. I'm gonna walk into a shitstorm if we ever get home.
You? Why? You didn't do anything.
They're not gonna blame you.
Good point, Joe. Well, nothing we can do about it now. To take your mind off that subject, behold, one of the forgotten classics of crappy 80s TV, Casablanca.
Oh, man, it was freaking awful. Basically, it was the Love Boat set in a North African bar in 1941. People come into the bar, the lead character solves their problems, then another person comes into the bar. Canceling that steaming pile was a mercy killing. Skippy made me suffer through all three episodes in less than 2 hours by speeding up the video. I wish he hadn't, because watching one was enough torture. The only good thing about wasting 2 hours of my life was I now had a piece of truly obscure 80s trivia I could inflict on other people. The retrieval teams got 4 dropships restarted with only minor glitches, and no one else had to run their suit power cells dangerously low like I did. Desai and I put our helmets back on, and I opened the big cargo bay doors at the rear of the dropship. With Desai flying on thrusters alone, she guided the Condor to pick up the 18 people remaining from the 2 groups we had left floating in space. I stood in the open doorway of the cargo bay, providing voice guidance to Desai, and tossed a line out to the first group, who had tightened their tethers to pull themselves in a tight formation so they could all fit through the doorway. The line was caught on the first try, and I used a winch to slowly pull the ball of 9 people into the bay, then closed the door and repressurized the bay. 9 people were very happy to get their helmets off. Like me, many people commented their arms and hands were cramped from pumping the handle that provided survival power to their suits. I got the first 9 into the forward passenger compartment where they could take turns washing up in the tiny bathroom while I pumped air out of the cargo bay so we could pick up the second group. With 20 people squeezed into our Condor, it felt like our uncomfortable flight down to Gingerbread. Fortunately, we wouldn't be stuck in the cramped confines of the dropship for nearly as long this time. "Hey, Skippy," I called him while I was still sealed up in my suit, inspecting thrusters to make sure they would be ready for the all-important flight back to the Dutchman. "How you doing over there? You have good news for us?"
"Hi, Joe. Good work getting people safely into your ship. It looks like everyone is going to come through without any serious health issues."
"Yeah." I had already used my command codes to ping every suit for a status check. Some people were mildly dehydrated, and extended time in suits had caused stiff muscles. But otherwise, everyone was going to be just fine. That assumed we could get back aboard a basically functional starship, because our dropships could not get us to a habitable planet from the middle of interstellar nowhere.
"Don't avoid the subject, Skippy. Did you shortcut work?"
I was very much hoping he could get the energy virus purged quicker than expected, and not just so we could get the galley back online and making cheeseburgers. Mostly I was anxious to get moving to help Colonel Perkins and her team, and the entire planet Paradise. The fear that we might already be too late ate at me. If even one infected keeper landed on Paradise, the Ruhar might take drastic action to safeguard their population, drastic action against all the humans on the planet. Yes, I was concerned for the humans on Paradise, but I will admit part of my sick feeling was that we had gone through enormous risk and effort to safeguard the future of humans there, and now all our hard work might be undone by a small group of hateful lizards. Okay, sure. A small group of humans on Kobamic had sparked a civil war that was consuming Kristang society, but that was totally different. I'm not a philosopher, so don't ask me how it's different. It just is. My shortcut has not worked as well as I had hoped, Joe.
Damn. So we can't cut 11 hours off the schedule?
Not quite. At first, the energy virus fell for my trick, but then the stupid thing must be smarter than I thought. Sorry about that. The remaining virus scattered itself across several clusters of power cells near the auxiliary reactor, and they are shielding themselves from me so I can't get at them without destroying the reactor. Give me the bottom line, Skippy. Bottom line, he sighed, is we can't cut 11 hours off the schedule. In fact, it now looks like I need to extend the timeline by another 40, perhaps 48 hours. 40 hours? Skippy, we can't wait that long. That ship full of keepers could be approaching Paradise now. You're right, Joe. Don't forget, we need to refuel the ship before we can go anywhere. I know that. And we still don't know where that ship is. Every minute the Dutchman sits dead in space, the danger to Paradise increases. True. Also, the longer the ship goes without power, the longer it will take me to bring critical systems up to operating temperature. Joe, I am simply out of options. We have no choice but to wait for those remaining power cells to drain completely. If you come back aboard, or even close to the ship, the energy virus can infect the dropships, or you monkeys, and we will be in even bigger trouble than we are now. Skippy was out of options. That meant we were out of options. Oh, wait. Was that true? Maybe our beer can was just out of ideas, not options. And right then, I had an idea. A commander should know every bolt, every weld of his ship. I should know what makes every system aboard the ship work. Because not even our science team understood most of the Theranan technology that made the Dutchman function, I had no chance to grasp even basic concepts behind the functioning of things like our jump drive coils. But one thing I did know was the physical layout of components making up our rebuilt Franken ship. Skippy, the only place that energy virus still exists is that one bank of power cells near the backup reactor? Yes. Why? He shushed me. Before you tell me your latest brilliant idea, the answer is no. We can't sacrifice that reactor so I can burn out the virus. I need to get the backup reactor restarted so it can energize the containment system of the main reactor. So, put that thought right out of your tiny little brain. I was tired, and I smelled terrible, even to myself. And I desperately wanted to get into a hot shower with a wire brush to scrape the accumulated layers of funkiness off my skin. Also, I had a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach that the entire human population of Paradise could be counting down to a death sentence. So, I didn't take time to savor the joy of outthinking his awesomeness. Skippy, I said with a combination of weariness, fear, and pain from a stiff neck. All those power cells are attached to a sort of scaffolding, right? I remember when you assembled that section of the ship in the junkyard. Correct. It was more convenient for maintenance to cluster those power cells together, though that makes the assembly more vulnerable to a single hit in battle. Yeah, we had to make a lot of compromises. That scaffolding is attached to the hull with explosive bolts? Yes, that is a safety feature so we can eject the power cells without damaging the reactor and... And damn it. And once again, I truly, truly hate you, Joe. You're telling me to blow those bolts and send those power cells spinning off into space? You got it. Despite how tired I felt, I grinned. Can the ship function without those power cells? It can for now. I will need to pull power cells from other parts of the ship eventually. But yes, we do not absolutely need those power cells. Joe, I should be insulted that I did not think of such a simple and obvious solution. Maybe... I am so emotionally invested in this ship I've rebuilt several times that I failed to consider sacrificing part of the ship. Skippy, at this point, there aren't many parts of the ship we can sacrifice without the whole damn thing falling apart. Will this work? Yes, it will. Give me 3 hours to make absolutely certain the energy virus is weakened enough so it can't try to migrate to another system, and then I'll blow the bolts. Crap! You're going to humiliate me about this, aren't you? No, Skippy, I won't tell anyone. You should tell the crew it was your idea. What? The crew have lost a lot of confidence in you, Skippy. You got suckered by that computer worm. You planned to jump into the Roach Motel, got the ship torn apart, and we barely escaped from there. Now we took aboard an energy virus you didn't know anything about. The crew, and Chotek in particular, need to regain their trust in you. I figure that you happily announcing the virus is dead way ahead of schedule will be a big confidence booster. Oh. because otherwise I would totally bust your balls about it until the end of time. I would expect no less. Joe, I feel like I'm cashing in a get-out-of-jail-free card. Karma is going to come back and bite me in the ass about this someday. How about you stop educating me about crappy 80s TV shows and we call it even? Can we compromise? And I'll take the Love Boat off the schedule. Why was I attempting to negotiate with a being who had fusion-powered stubbornness? Take Love Boat and Knight Rider off the schedule and you've got a deal. Deal. Oh, Joe, I can't wait to show you my surprise. 2 lost episodes of Casablanca. Oh, man, I groaned. Can't they stay lost? 3 hours later, Skippy blew the explosive bolt and ejected the contaminated power cells away from our starship, prompting cheers aboard all 4 dropships. We still could not go back to the ship because there was no point going aboard until Skippy had power restored. That took a bit longer than the beer can estimated. Still, we were able to cut more than a full day off Skippy's original schedule of 86 hours. There were smiles all around when we detected heat from the backup reactor, and Skippy announced that Space B&B was now accepting reservations for cabins aboard the ship. "It will take another hour before hot water is available for showers," he warned. "I had to drain all the pipes before the water in them froze while the ship was shut down, and I'm having to let water trickle back in slowly." "No problem, Skippy. It will take us more than an hour to get back and secure the dropships anyway. What about gravity?" "The main reactor is just coming back online at minimum power. It should be stable in about 20 minutes. Then I can resume feeding power to the artificial gravity plating." "To do that, you need to divert power from recharging the jump drive capacitors? I know you are worried that the ship is vulnerable until the capacitors reach a minimum charge for a jump, but don't worry about artificial gravity. If I keep gravity at 1/3 G, that will delay achieving a jump by only 13 minutes. All right. I considered 13 minutes to be an acceptable risk, and the crew deserved an opportunity to get out of their suits to enjoy a luxurious shower. "Please warn the crew the ship will be a bit on the chilly side for a few hours." "We will wear sweaters, Skippy." "And you are absolutely certain it is safe for us to come back to the ship?" "No, I am as certain as I can be. Rebooting the ship gave me an opportunity to conduct a deep scan, and I am confident those nasty guardians didn't sneak aboard any more surprises for us. I'm sorry, but that's the truth." "Good enough, I guess." The sad truth was we didn't have a choice. The Dutchman was our only option. We flew a careful course back to the Flying Dutchman, keeping the bulk of the forward hull between our drop ships and the discarded power cells that were slowly drifting farther from the ship. I waited for the last of the 4 crew drop ships to be brought back aboard, then ordered the crew to get cleaned up, with pilots reporting back to the docking bays in 1 hour. We sent teams out to recover the other dropships, an operation that took another 6 hours. After that, Desai gently goosed the ship forward away from the contaminated power cells to test the normal space engines. We kept the jump drive on a hair trigger for an emergency escape, but no danger emerged, so we didn't jump until we had enough charge to take us a useful distance toward a star system where we could find a gas giant planet to refill the Dutchman's depleted fuel tanks.